mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, let us not forget, in between the cookouts, the road trips, and the summer kickoff parties, a reminder about taking the time to remember what Memorial Day really stands for. Also this morning, with the long overdue farm bill still in limbo, lawmakers have included several of its provisions in their proposed Big Beautiful Bill. Where does that leave ag producers? And today's Throwback Thursday segment, with the arrival of summer and people getting back outdoors more frequently, it's a perfect time to make our neighborhoods more neighborly. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, May 22nd, 2025. Congratulations to the class of 2025. High school seniors will soon don the cap and gown and get their diploma. And the United States, it says here, is welcoming its largest group of graduating high school seniors in the history of the nation. So, class of 2025, congratulations. You hold the record for the largest group of graduating high school seniors in America. This is according to a report from the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education. The projected number of high school graduates will be just short of 4 million this year. But you're probably not going to hold the record for long, because a decline. Well, it says here, well, I guess I said that wrong. You probably will hold the record for a while, because following this year, a decline is projected through 2041, because the trend 18 years ago turned to fewer births, and we've seen fewer births each year since then. So, largest graduating class, nearly 4 million, and by 2041, we'll be down to about 3.5 million. So, kind of interesting. I guess it makes sense. I mean, we've been talking, obviously, for nearly two decades about the declining number of births in this country. It would naturally follow that we would see a decline in high school graduating classes 18 years out. So, now, for those students who are ending the school year in the coming days, but are not graduating, what is it that parents always worry about? The summer slide. And experts are sounding the alarm about the phenomenon where kids lose academic ground over the summer break. Studies have shown that more than half of U.S. students experience learning losses year after year, with some losing up to a third of their progress in critical subjects like math and reading, all during the summer vacation months. That summer brain drain, the summer slide. Parenting expert Erica Suter has a few simple, creative ways to sneak in some learning into those everyday moments during the summer, all while keeping it fun. Lemonade stands, she says, are more than just cute. They are full of math opportunities, as kids count change, track expenses, even calculate their profit, so you can practice your math skills, letting your kids set up a lemonade stand. You could also involve your child in the kitchen, especially if you have people coming over for a summer gathering and you need to make a dish that is larger than what you would normally make. You can enlist the help of your child in doubling a recipe. You see, obviously, requires multiplication, easy for me to say early in the morning, measurement skills, reading comprehension, plus you get cookies out of it. So how about that? Additionally, if you're going on vacation, try turning your family road trip into a geography lesson. Or instead of banning screens, how many times do we say we're just going to kick our kids off their devices, say, get outdoors, just go play. Put that phone down, put that tablet down, get off the computer, and go outside and play. Well, instead of banning those screens, You can shape how they are used by looking for educational apps and games that have a learning component that are also fun for the kids. So just kind of, rather than banning them, use them to your advantage to the extent that you can. And finally, she says, embrace the boredom, because it won't be long before the kids start to, the excitement of summer vacation starts to wear thin and you'll get to the I'm boreds of the summer. Embrace that. She says it can be a secret weapon that helps foster problem-solving skills, creativity, giving kids the space to invent their own games or their own stories when they're bored. So embrace the I'm boreds. Just some of the ways we can avoid the summer slide that inevitably will settle in over the long summer vacation period. Speaking of screens, by the way, here's something you may want to be aware of if you're a video gamer or your kids are. Sony is discontinuing. Man, I cannot talk this morning. I apologize. Sony is discontinuing its PlayStation Rewards program. They unveiled their rewards program back in 2022 to give dedicated players a chance to earn perks like digital collectibles and that kind of thing. Those NFTs, remember when those were all the rage? Now, Sony says the program is no longer accepting new members and will come to an end later this year. Current members will still be able to earn digital collectibles through July 23rd and will be able to redeem their PlayStation Rewards points through November of 2026. But no new members, and eventually they're ramping it down. Now, they did assure fans, players, that they will still be able to access their collectibles after the program ends. So, thank goodness for that, because I was really worried about that. No, I'm not a gamer, but I guess this is big news for those who are. So I'm going to pass that along. Couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The World Health Organization is adopting a landmark pandemic agreement. A pandemic agreement among the nations of the World Health Organization. It was brought on by the response to the COVID pandemic, of course. The agreement lays out steps for better sharing information and a streamlined system for cooperation when global health emergencies arise. It also aims to reduce barriers in getting health products and equipment where and when they are needed. And again, it evolved out of shortcomings in the global COVID response. The kicker, of course, is that the United States, no longer a member nation of the World Health Organization. President Trump pulled us out of that organization really on the first day of his second term. That was one of the first things that he did upon returning to office. So it doesn't cover us, but globally, they've got a plan. They've got a better plan than what they had during COVID, which was basically no plan. So any plan is better than no plan. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, if you are taking a road trip, as millions of people are for this Memorial Day weekend, you may want to be aware of this if you are heading south. Now, this would not be something that we would necessarily be talking about ordinarily, but with so many people traveling, and you might be heading, I don't know, somewhere to the beach, somewhere south, somewhere sunny, somewhere where it'll be warmer than it will be here this Memorial Day weekend. Drivers in Kentucky are being reminded that the turtle crossing season has begun. That's right, it's turtle crossing season in Kentucky. The Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources in the Bluegrass State says those who find turtles on the roadway should stop and help them across the road in the direction that they are heading. Don't turn them around. If they are going in one particular direction across the roadway, stop and help them out. The public is also urged to never relocate turtles and do not take them as pets, because removing them from their natural habitat reduces their chance of survival. So it is turtle crossing season in Kentucky. I just want to let you know, in case your travels for Memorial Day weekend or sometime this summer might take you south of Ohio, across the Ohio River into the Bluegrass State. So very important. Very important to know. It's turtle crossing season. Our neighbors to the south. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers likely again today with a high in the middle 50s. Showers possible tonight, low in the mid 40s. The Findlay Police Department is participating in the Click It or Ticket campaign through June 1st. Click It or Ticket is a national high visibility enforcement campaign focusing specifically on the consequences of not wearing a seatbelt. The Findlay Police Department says no matter what type of vehicle you drive, one of the safest choices drivers and passengers can make is to buckle up. And the police department says the campaign is a reminder to all drivers and their passengers of the importance of wearing a seatbelt and the legal consequences, including fines, of not doing so. Get more on the Click It or Ticket campaign in this story on our website. A school district in Northwest Ohio says an adult pretending to be a student has attended classes there for more than a year.
An investigation by Perrysburg Police, along with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, found that 24-year-old Anthony Emmanuel Labrador Sierra used fraudulent documents to enroll at Perrysburg High School and posed as a 17-year-old student. The school district says he has been enrolled since January of 2024 and had been staying with two local guardians who contacted the district last week after learning he might not be a minor.
ONN's Kate Burdett reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library is inviting families to participate in Summer Connect, an initiative bringing free, family-friendly events to neighborhoods right where people live, play, and gather. The library says, building on the success of last year's pilot event, Summer Connect 2025 is expanding to 7 events in parks and community spaces throughout the city. Designed to reach families, the events aim to connect community members with local resources, all while enjoying fun, engaging activities for all ages. The first Summer Connect event will be held on June 5th at Bernard Park. See the full schedule and get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, in between all of the cookouts and the road trips and the summer kickoff parties that will be happening this weekend, a reminder about taking the time to remember what Memorial Day really stands for. We are joined this morning by Toby Brown. He is operations manager for the Hancock County Veterans Service Office. And Toby, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having us out.
I know Memorial Day is not about veterans, and that's yep. You know, one of the first things, and we've said it before, the old saying that Armed Forces Day is for those who wear the uniform. Veterans Day is for those that used to wear the uniform. Memorial Day is for those who will forever wear the uniform. But that's not to say that this isn't a significant holiday for veterans such as yourself.
You know, it's a very important holiday, but it's a very important day to remember the men and women of the U.S. military that gave the ultimate sacrifice and lost their life in service. And, you know, it's a huge day to remember them.
And I think this is a day that it seems that a lot of veterans especially will be of the mindset, there but for the grace of God go I, in large measure, when you think about that sacrifice.
Yeah, you know, I served in the Marine Corps for 20 years, and I got a lot of people that I know, and, you know, not everybody came home, and we think about them every single day. And I think it's important to remember them every day and remember their families as well, you know, because they aren't able to escape that. They remember that every single day, you know, and
It also, I think, does bring to mind, as it relates to the veterans that we have in our community and maybe in our family, it also recalls the programs that are out there for a number of veterans that may have, for example, survivor's guilt, who have struggled with that adjustment of coming home and returning to civilian life.
Yeah, you know, we at the Hancock County Veterans Service Office, we offer so many different opportunities to help veterans in the community with exactly that, you know, where that survivor's guilt. We have groups that meet every week. We have different opportunities, Guitars for Vets and GI Tunes, a whole bunch of different things that we offer to be there in support of all veterans, no matter what.
Yeah. So even though this is not a day that is about the veterans themselves, it still certainly has a component of that. What does this mean when, you know, we talk about Memorial Day and what is the quote unquote proper observance that the rest of us should take the time for this Memorial Day weekend?
You know, as a veteran myself, it's, to me, it's not about me on Memorial Day. It's definitely about the men and women that gave that sacrifice, and as you said, you know, they wear the uniform forever. And so I think for people that go out on Memorial Day, it's you know, remember those, go out to the cemeteries, go to the parades, go to all the events that the community offers, and be there to remember that sacrifice, to remember the family members that didn't get to bring that loved one home.
Yeah.
And I think it's important, you know, it's just not about that day. You know, there's so many different things that you can do, whether it's you're going to those events, but, you know, they gave that sacrifice so that we can be here and be sitting here today to do what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And I think in order to honor that sacrifice, you know, go out and do a community cleanup. Go out and do something in your community to make it better, because they gave that ultimate sacrifice for you to be able to do anything here. And I think by giving back to your community, that honors that sacrifice.
I heard it said once, and I loved this, and I've actually shared it on social media in the past, right around this time of year, that if you really want to honor those who have given the ultimate sacrifice for our country, live your life as an American worth dying for.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many things that you can do, and you know, to be a productive citizen in society in the United States.
Yeah.
And I think if you do that, it's absolutely honoring that. And then, you know, for the young ones out there, like, go ask a veteran or a family member that served, you know, that veteran, and hear their stories.
Yeah.
You know, some of them don't want to talk about it, but some of them do, and it helps build that bond, and I think it helps understand that sacrifice that those individuals did.
Yeah. And none of that is to say that you can't enjoy the weekend and all of those things that go along with it, and the kickoff of summer and the parties and the cookouts and all of that. That's part of what it's about too.
Absolutely. You know, go out and do all of that stuff, because enjoying that time with family and friends is another way to honor that. And, and I think it's important to do that as well. Go out there and have a good time, you know, but take that moment to honor and acknowledge that ultimate sacrifice that they gave.
Yeah, keeping that in the back of your mind. By the way, while we have you here, we also want to mention, because I know it's coming up in just a couple of weeks, and we're going to talk more about it when we get a little bit closer, but the Vet Fest is coming up on Flag Day on June 14th, which is right around the corner right now.
Yeah, absolutely. We're so excited about Vet Fest on June 14th. You know, we've got three different bands coming out. We've got food trucks coming out. We're going to have a whole bunch of motorcycles riding in. It's going to be a great event, a great family event that super inexpensive to come out. And, you know, it's not a political event or anything like that. It's just a time to come out and, and support. And it's not just for veterans. It's for anybody that wants to come out on June 14th and have a good time with some good bands and food.
It's Flag Day, and it is also the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army. As a Marine Corps veteran, I know that's not a big deal for you, but I'm just kidding. Yeah. You are, I bring it up, one of the reasons I bring it up, you are looking for sponsorship and volunteers, people can who can help make this happen.
Absolutely. So, you know, we've got a set number of volunteers that we need in order to put this event on.
And more the merrier.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on in, you know, call our office and we'd be happy to get them signed up to help and sponsorships. You know, we're looking for any support that somebody wants to get. The community's been great so far. I mean, we've had so many people reach out to us with donations to help support the event, just asking how can we help, how can we help, and people signing up. But the more the merrier is always good. But we are really looking forward to it. You know, our Ed Newton in our office has put a lot of work into this, and it's going to be a great event. So we're hoping to get a lot of people out there and just enjoy time with each other.
If folks are interested in learning more, maybe being a part of it, volunteering, or somebody who owns a business or wants to help out monetarily, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, they just reach out to our office or go to our website, and there's a VetFest link on there. And but yeah, give us a call and we'll be happy to get them set up.
Very good. We have that link on our webpage, goodmornings.net, if you want to learn more. And in the meantime, Memorial Day, let's remember what it is all about this weekend amidst all of the celebrations. And once again, Toby Brown, Operations Manager, the Hancock County Veterans Service Office, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you very much for having me out.
So the big news story this morning, breaking just a bit ago, the House has passed their big, beautiful bill, that 1,100-page omnibus tax and spending bill that they've been working on for quite some time, that included several of the provisions that you would normally expect to see in the Farm Bill, which is still in limbo and long overdue. Joining us, so where does all of this leave ag producers and what's in there? Joining us this morning is Dwayne Statler. He is not only a local pork producer, but also serves as president of the National Pork Producers Council. And in that role, actually had conversations with those in the room as that big, beautiful bill was being crafted. And Dwayne, thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, we appreciate it.
That's no problem, Chris. It's glad to enjoy you this morning.
So, first of all, this is not the Farm Bill. That still is not done. But what is in this bill that is of note for ag producers?
Well, for ag producers, this includes Title I and Title XI. And those particular titles deal with reference prices that the agricultural programs are set on, as far as the price for commodities, corn, beans, your dairy products. All the commodities have got a reference price that's referred to for the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then Title XI is the part of the program that basically, unless as far as for government subsidies anymore, there are very few of those. It's all tied in one group with the insurance. And that Title XI sets the insurance rates. In other words, how much a producer pays for crop insurance. So those two things are the main things that are in the bill. There was about $80 million worth of what they call orphan projects that were financially related, because in the reconciliation bill that they're working on here that will go through the Senate, it has to include things with just strictly changes in money. So those programs were added in because of a little bit of an increase compared to what they were in the last bill. Those items included things like protection for the veterinaries and for the animal science labs for foreign animal disease, foreign animal disease bank. Those type of programs were in that $80 million worth of orphan programs. So That is all that they could get in and through reconciliation, and that is what is in this bill that just passed the House this morning now and will go to conference in the Senate.
Now, I know that that is very good news for ag producers, because even though the farm bill, the existing farm bill, had been extended, I know that there was a lot of anxiety about the fact that, you know, these things change over time. We're talking about a farm bill that goes back more than 5 years. What is it, 2018, I think, was the last farm bill? So
yes, 2018 was the last farm bill.
Yeah, so yeah. These things needed to be updated, but where does that leave the farm bill? Because like I said, this is not a new farm bill. That still remains in limbo.
Yes, that has been the big question all along, and that was even a debate amongst those on Capitol Hill about, if you do this, there's a concern that there will be no real need to go through and take care of an actual farm bill, mm-hmm. which there are things still left in the farm bill, such as conservation programs and still some of the other programs that really help rural agriculture and rural communities together. But that stuff is not in this. So that leaves that a little bit, you know, compensating. The food, the SNAP programs are included on this because that dealt with money.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot left of the farm bill other than some things that rural areas normally depend on.
Yeah.
And that's the question. One thing for pork producers that is out of this, because it does not involve money, was a fix for the Proposition 12 out of California that has created some angst amongst producers in the United States.
So explain what that is for those who are unaware.
For Prop 12, the state of California passed a law. Gosh, I can't even remember what the date, because it's been held up in the Supreme Court and mm-hmm. everything on what it was. But
yeah.
it basically changed status that California required any pork coming into their state to be raised in an open pen gestation that had 24 square feet.
Mm.
And it had, and then they could inspect, they would come and inspect your farm outside of their state, and in order to be able to get to the processor. Well, that also created problems in the processor and in the marketing, because that just added, you know, processors have to shut down their line and yeah. then run this line separate to keep it, you know, separate.
Right.
And then that also created just twice as many product SKUs in the distribution line.
Yeah.
So you take, like, at your distribution centers where they had one pork chop, now they have two pork chops.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So that just, and it created confusion. Well, and the thing of it is, it was basically said, it wasn't basically for the health of the animals. It was for trying to make another hurdle for people to go through.
Yeah.
And that Ohio had already had a Ohio Livestock Standards committee mm-hmm. that created things, and that was an agreement between the state of Ohio and HSUS, which is one of the activist groups that was pushing this.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 17 years to make that commitment. Matter of fact, all of our barns in the state of Ohio are now under that commitment, and that square footage happened to be at 20 square feet. And one of the reasons they went this law there is they wanted to up the square footage just to make farmers have to spend more money.
Right. Yeah.
And now we have a bill pending in Oklahoma that is looking at 34 square feet for the sow.
So you could end up with a bunch of different regulations from one state
right.
to the next, and this eliminates that. So with respect to, you mentioned not only are there programs or there items here in this omnibus bill, the big, beautiful bill, that tie directly to agriculture, it also touches on the SNAP program and so on. With respect to that, I know the House version and the Senate version on the SNAP benefits are millions of dollars apart. Unlike with the farm bill, where that could hold everything up, that wouldn't necessarily torpedo the parts of the omnibus bill that relate directly to the ag industry, right? So in that respect, it might be a benefit to doing it this way.
Yes, that was the reason why the push was to get this in this reconciliation bill, was because if they could not get together on something else, this did get the programs that are basic, both the this will be worked out in conference and between, you know, what the Senate version is and the House version is. They'll each pass it, then they'll get together and they'll try to get their things to where they can get it through both bills. That will yet to see whether it will be approved in both houses again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right now there's about a $230 million difference between the food program between the House version and the Senate version.
Yeah, big difference. It just circles back to the question, with all of this included in the big beautiful bill, does that mean, would it be most likely that we are not going to see a farm bill this time around? That we'll already start working on the next one. Just skip this cycle and go to the next farm bill, because as people know, this is something that really needs to be done every 5 years, right? I mean, that's the typical cycle.
Yes, that's the typical cycle, Chris. But there is still, from G.T. Thompson and from Senator Bozeman in the Senate side, they are still feeling as though they can accomplish the rest of the farm bill yet this year.
Okay.
That is still going to be their push.
All right.
Now, that will depend on what the likelihood is of how everybody else feels about it.
Right.
You remember, they are the two chairmen of this, you know, of the ag committees, so their wish is to get this done and finished, and we will see how time prevails. But I see it very hard to get the farm bill done by the September 30th, when they would have to have it done by, because that's all the extension is to that point.
Yeah,
I can see, I guess it would look promising if they make an extension onto the existing farm bill to run it through the end of the year. Then I would say that's a signal to us that it's promising, that it looks like they're going to be able to get the rest of the farm bill done, Chris.
Okay, so we will watch for that. Real quickly, I want to ask before we let you go, you are actually joining us from Mexico this morning. You are there for that country's National Pork Conference. And I know, obviously, trade has been a very big story within the ag industry, with it, you know, nationally, trade obviously has been a major story. But as it relates to agriculture, what are you hearing from our neighbors to the south? And I know you've spoken with the Canadian contingent as well. What are you hearing with respect to trade and the opportunities for agriculture amidst all of this trade unrest?
Well, the nice thing of it is, Chris, is we have an outstanding relationship between Canadian and Mexican pork producers, and we've established that over the years. And the retaliation, there has been no retaliation on pork or any of the meats is in agriculture between those countries, even though there is a little bit of a trade discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
We are concerned about it for both countries, because we have open lines and, you know, open production between the three. And as far as the producers are, we're hoping it stays status quo, that nobody goes any farther than what it is right now. But yes, Mexico is our largest export market.
Yeah.
So that is critical to us. And the same way with Canada, they are a large export market.
Yeah.
And a unique thing about Canada is we raise a lot of Canadian pigs in the U.S. and even in Ohio. They had a packing plant that closed here a couple years ago, and so they were selling market pigs into Ohio.
Hmm.
Well, now that when you talk about transportation, there's only about 160 pigs of market pigs go on a semi, and so they found producers that would still raise the pigs down here. So now they are born in Canada, raised in the U.S. because they can put 1,000 feeder pigs on a truck and bring them in. So the transportation was quite a bit cheaper to help them recover from the loss of that packing plant.
Interesting. Interesting. And obviously, this has an impact on the overall trade balance of the United States, too, which is why it becomes an issue that goes far beyond agriculture. But good stuff there. Again, Duane Stadler is local pork producer and president of the National Pork Producers Council with us this morning. Duane, thanks very much for taking some time and laying this all out for us, sharing your insight. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Chris, and I hope the sun shines back up there again soon.
don't rub it in that you're in Mexico.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
An ODOT truck that was taken from a rest stop in Meigs County last week is now being returned after being recovered by police in the Columbus suburb of Reynoldsburg. I don't know how it ended up there. Spokesperson for the Ohio Department of Transportation, Matt Bruning, says that the marked truck was not an unmarked ODOT vehicle. This was a marked ODOT truck. And you know what those things look like, how big they are. And marked truck was stolen while the crew was mowing at the rest stop this past Friday. It is unclear whether anyone has been charged in connection with the theft. Why would you steal an ODOT truck? I mean, of all things, if you're going to steal a vehicle, you want to be inconspicuous, right? You don't steal a high-end sports car. You don't steal a police vehicle. You don't steal an ODOT truck. At least they've got it back now. More law enforcement fun here in the broken news. New York State trooper charged with faking his own shooting on Long Island is pleading guilty to the charge. Thomas Masha claimed back in October that he was shot by the driver of a disabled car on the Southern State Parkway, which triggered a massive manhunt for the suspect. On Wednesday, the 27-year-old trooper Masha admitted in court that he had staged the whole thing, shooting himself in the leg and planting shell casings at the scene. Police believe the reason that he did this, because that was naturally my first question, why in the world would you do such a thing? Police believe the reason was to get sympathy from his ex. Love will make you do strange things, won't it? Now, former trooper Masha, I'm assuming he's a former, the story doesn't say whether he's a former trooper, but I'm guessing he's probably out of a job. Former Trooper Masha, who is charged with falsely reporting an incident and tampering with physical evidence, now faces 6 months in jail and 5 years probation under the plea deal. He will also have to pay close to $300,000 in restitution, which will be hard to do at a job. His final sentencing is set for late August. All to get sympathy from his ex. Not to be outdone, California police officer Nicole Brown is in trouble. Back in 2023, she claimed that she had suffered debilitating injuries on the job. And as a police officer, that is not necessarily hard to believe. It's a tough job, and you can certainly get injured. However, prosecutors now claim that Officer Brown attended the Stagecoach Music Festival and visited Disneyland while she was on disability leave. Yeah, probably not a good idea. Back in March of 2022, Officer Brown sustained a cut on her forehead while handcuffing a suspect. Days later, she was put on temporary disability leave. She has now been charged with 15 felonies related to workers' compensation insurance fraud. The 39-year-old collected more than $600,000 in workers' comp. She faces 22 years in prison if convicted. And again, one would think that she is now out of a job. No longer employed in the field of law enforcement. Just a bad look. And a couple of other items in the broken news. You notice I said utter items. That is because this, from the international file of the broken news, this is from the village of Blatten. Which, what country is Blatten in? Scotland, right? I believe it is, or no, Switzerland, I'm sorry. Village in Switzerland, the village of Blatten. Apparently, the entire village was ordered to be evacuated due to unstable terrain and the threat of a giant rock slide that they worried was just going to bury the town. 300 people were successfully transported out of the village, but unfortunately, I guess this is a big farming community, and they have a large population of cows. And while some of the bovines were able to be walked out of the village on foot, some had to be left behind. And so they actually called in helicopters to airlift the remaining cows out of the village. Some 52 cows had to be airlifted using the choppers. It is unclear when or if the cattle and the humans will be able to return home. But good news is they're all safe. They called in helicopters to airlift the cows to safety. I'm going to leave no one behind. And finally, in the broken news this morning, kind of a light collection of broken news. Good stories, but kind of a light collection of broken news this morning. This out of Eugene, Missouri. The story of Leanna Binkley, who found a snake popping its head out from underneath the hood of her car the other day. She goes to get in the car, and there's a snake popping its head out from the underneath the hood of her car. She and her son attempted to chase the snake out of the vehicle, but the sneaky little passenger was determined to stay and dipped back into the engine. Ms. Binkley then decided to drive to the local school where she teaches and enlist the help of several of her coworkers, and even the superintendent of the school joined in the effort to get the snake out of the car. It's amazing. She drove to school with the snake in the engine of her car. I guess she figured it probably couldn't get into the passenger compartment if it was in the engine. But amazingly, the snake survived the trip. They're in the engine, survived the trip to the school. Apparently, it took some intense effort, but the group was finally able to remove the snake and turn it over to the Missouri Department of Conservation, which determined that through all of this, the snake was unharmed. Wow. That is quite the story. Can you imagine? That's... And again, if that doesn't happen to you today, then all things considered, it's not been a bad day. You know, no matter how bad, no matter what happens to you today, as long as you don't end up with a snake in the engine of your car that you can't get out, then it's not been, on balance, that bad of a day, I guess. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. With that, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is the sound of a popular American motorcycle. It's the sound of freedom, the open road, really good times. And this is what it sounds like with a drunk guy in it. How do you like the sound of that? Cops are cracking down on drunk motorcycle riders. If you ride drunk, you will get caught and you will get arrested. Drunk riding. Over the limit, under arrest. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. In a new survey, 69% of dog owners say their pup has a doggy best friend. Does your dog have a best friend? The poll also found that 83% of pet parents feel good when they have a sense of accomplishment when their dog is able to make new friends. Among those who say their dog has its own social group, 55% say their pup is happier as a result. 48% have noticed improved social skills. Animal health and behavioral expert Aaron Askelin says dogs are just like we are. Being able to see other dogs and interact with them on a regular basis does a lot of good for their mental and their emotional well-being. So if your dog doesn't have a best friend, socialize him or her more. Get them a best friend. And it is possible for dogs to have friends on that level, best friends on that level. Here's the kicker, though, to the survey. 63% of the respondents in the survey believe that their dogs get to socialize more than they do. And lastly, now, in this final segment of today's program, I want to leave you with this. We know that today's neighborhoods are changing. You know, the neighborhood that I grew up in is very different than it used to be, and even the neighborhood I live in now has certainly changed from when my kids were younger. And not only are neighborhoods changing, so too the definition of being neighborly. Used to be that you knew every one of your neighbors, usually on a first name basis. I hate to admit it, but I don't anymore. Several years ago, the folks at State Farm, you know their famous slogan, right? They put together a survey on what it means to be a good neighbor in this day and age. And we spoke with lifestyle expert Harriet Cole about the results, and they are still relevant today. From all the way back in May of 2016, it is today's Throwback Thursday. Harriet, what did you find from this survey?
Some of the key things that we learned are that good neighbors tend to be described as quiet, as respectful of privacy, as willing to help out if needed, as people who really want to connect with each other, who want to socialize with each other, you know, who want to be welcomed when they join a neighborhood. And so these kinds of things, Chris, are similar to what our parents and grandparents may have wanted and even experienced. The difference is that often it falls short when you come to action. So they want it, but they may not be doing it. You know, like I said, the people wanted to be welcomed into a neighborhood, often they were not welcomed, and in turn, they didn't welcome other people when the people came into the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So there are these shortfalls when it comes to taking action for what we really want. And the belief, Chris, is that it's twofold. One, this sense of really wanting to respect people's privacy can often make you feel uncomfortable about knocking on somebody's door, because the last thing you want to be is somebody who's invading a person's privacy.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things that struck me as you were talking about some of those results is that it almost seems like a contradiction. We want people to be respectful and quiet and private, and yet they want to be. We want our neighbors to be social at the same time. So that can be kind of a tough balancing act.
It can be, and also because so many people are busy, they often just don't take the time to reach out. But one of the other things that we learned in the study is that technology is playing a role in some instances in connecting us. You know, with millennials who we know grew up with using all different kinds of technology, including social media, they are often using technology and social media to bridge back to making that person-to-person connection in the neighborhood. And also, and this was a bit of a surprise, that seniors are using technology. They are texting, sending pictures, and we think it's because as they become possibly less mobile, they still want to interact with the people surrounding them and also with their loved ones wherever they may live. So they are engaging technology to support the cultivation of these relationships as well.
So at the end of the day, the methods may be a little bit different, but the neighborhoods, or what we define as a neighborhood, or what we look for within our own neighborhood, is really not all that different than what we think of, or what we experienced a generation ago.
I think that it is what we want and what we feel we need is consistent.
Mm-hmm.
The compositions of our neighborhoods have changed. You know, we learned that most people said that they had more than one language spoken in their neighborhood. You know, America is really becoming more of a melting pot. People
yeah.
of different backgrounds are moving into neighborhoods with each other, which is really wonderful. But people need to remember to connect, meet those people. You know, have that block party because it's about to be warm. Have that party. And one thing we learned, Chris, is that everybody wants to go to the party, but hardly anybody wants to go.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. That struck me when I was looking at some of the highlights in terms of, you know, connecting with neighbors, is that we all want to do that, but nobody wants to kind of take the bull by the horns.
Right. Here's the thing. This is not going to be the party where nobody shows up. Our survey results said everybody wants to come. They just don't want to host it themselves. So somebody step up and host a party.
Somebody has to step up and do this. Somebody has to step up and do this. It is a good point. Somebody has to plan it. Somebody has to host it. You know, one of the other things we hear people lament about, when I grew up, the kids were all outdoors playing at one neighbor's house or the other neighbor's house and running from one yard to another, or they're out riding their bikes around the neighborhood or whatever. And kids don't do that anymore. And part of that is because we maybe think that it's a more dangerous world. But when you have that neighborhood connectivity and that sense that everybody's looking out for everybody else because you know each other, then it's not quite as scary to let our kids roam free in the neighborhood and do what we did when we were young.
When I was growing up, my mother used to say that she had eyes in the back of her head, and it was all the neighbors who were looking and watching out for us.
Exactly.
We had to do the right thing, right? In the same way, I think if we revitalize our neighborhoods with that connectivity where we parents know the other parents and other people in the neighborhood, and you make sure that they know your kids, and so when the kids are out and about, you are not the only one looking out for them. Similarly, the elders in the neighborhood, we need to be looking out for them.
Sure.
It is not too late to do it. This study tells us that right now is the time to take action. It is not too late to strengthen those bonds, to form the ones that don't exist yet, and to really cultivate a much richer experience for your life. Your life is not just your work.
Mm-hmm.
You go home and you're in your neighborhood. If you connect to those people, you are going to have a much better, rounded experience in your life. And yes, even safer for your kids and for yourself.
So let's make that the resolution for this summer, that we are going to get more connected to the neighborhood, to our neighbors. And again, as cross-cultural as our neighborhoods are, think of all of the ways that can enrich not only our kids, but ourselves as well.
Yes, today, go out and connect with one of your neighbors. Look, we can make this a national effort where we reach out neighborhood to neighborhood, connect to our neighbors. And I'm telling you, the survey tells us that we're going to feel better about it.
From back in May of 2016, lifestyle expert Harriet Cole with today's Throwback Thursday. And you can learn more about making our neighborhoods more neighborly at our webpage, goodmornings.net. And that will finish up today's podcast. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, for more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show, you can check us out online, goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more right there at our webpage. So drop by and visit us on the World Wide Web. Coming up tomorrow on the program, it's no secret that vacation hotspots cost more to visit during their peak season. A new Bankrate report reveals which destinations typically see the largest price hikes. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow to finish up the week.